After 25 years on the air, Oprah Winfrey ends her award-winning daytime talk show next week. Oprah is now a global phenomenon, and even if you don't watch, you've probably seen the effect of her show. It drives books up the bestseller list, it influences political campaigns, but her show wasn't an instant success. Over the years, she reinvented her program, first covering tabloid stories, then shifting to a focus on literature, spirituality, and self-improvement. In the process, she's created and marketed a global brand recognizable simply by the sound of her voice.
Cue the drum roll. All right, open your boxes. Open your boxes. One, two, three.
Oh, yeah, remember, everyone in the studio audience won their own Pontiac G6 sedan that day. As Oprah evolved over the years, she touched many along the way. She launched new TV careers from Dr. Phil to Rachel Ray, and she became a respected philanthropist. Now, we'd like to hear from you. What's your most memorable Oprah moment? Call us at 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, or join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik joins us here, from our New York bureau. Hey there, David.
Hey, Jennifer. How
are
you?
Longtime fan, regular watcher, are you?
You know, we've all watched Oprah over the years, and forgive me if I stumble. I was just looking under my chair to see if you had left anything for me. I think
sorry,
she's,
no cars.
You know, if you think about it, she has for a generation been a constant daily daytime presence for millions of Americans and families, and, you know, particularly women, but not only women, to sort of thrash out how they felt about things. And as you said, you know, she started out as someone who really dwelled in the landscape of the salacious. You know, she would have on the, you know, hermaphroditic prostitute and her mother, and, you know, the arguments that would ensue. And then she really segued over time and sort of predicted where tastes might go.
Now, tell us, take us back to the beginning. She started out as a local television journalist.
She sure did. She was a young, very young journalist, pretty much fresh out of school at in Nashville, and then went to Baltimore. I used to be a media reporter in Baltimore, and I knew her co-host, a guy named Richard Scher, charming guy, still there at the local CBS affiliate, who thought he was the star when he was paired with her in a show called, you know, something like Look Who's Talking, or, you know, Baltimore's Talking. And they took on all kinds of issues that were themselves periodically salacious, but also sometimes substantive. And the mix appealed to her. She had been kind of unsuccessful as a local anchor, and she'd really been attached to a local anchor there who sort of has that more gravitas feel to him. And he did a lot to make her feel unwelcome and make it clear that he didn't think she measured up to his standards. And she thought, you know, I want a different kind of telling the news. I want a more empathetic approach.
And so the talk show as it is today, when did that start? When, where?
Well, she moved to Chicago, got away from Baltimore, and she really found herself there. She took a show that had been the lowest-rated talk show and turned it into the highest-rated in the Chicago market, beating the guy who was the giant at the time, the captain of empathy, but also of certainly more provocative subjects, Phil Donahue, mm-hmm. if you remember.
Oh,
and
yes.
she beat him in Chicago, and that was something pretty notable. He was very famous, you know, famous wife, famous topics. And she said, okay, I can do this too, and she took it with King World. She took her Chicago show national, and the start wasn't perfect, and yet the critics saw that there was somebody really vibrant there, a mind and a sensibility and an empathy that audiences would respond to, and soon enough they sure did.
Now, there was a shift, though, of focus. Tell us how that came about.
Well, she felt after not quite a decade that, you know, I think she felt two things. First off is I think she genuinely felt, you know, I've focused so much on human dysfunction and misery in a lot of these topics, you know, that I don't know that I want to spend that much time on it. I don't know that this is where I want my career to be, and this is where I want my attentions to be focused. But secondly, she's always been an exceptionally savvy producer of her own career. She's been somebody who's been able to figure out where the market's headed. And the market was somewhat glutted. You had Donahue. You had people like Geraldo Rivera at times. You had Sally Jesse Raphael. If these names are not familiar, stop me. But you had a bunch of these people in the same terrain. And she said, you know how I can differentiate myself is I can focus on issues that affect how people actually live, not the craziness of how the tiny percentages of Americans actually experience life.
Let's take a listener here. Theodore is in Edmond, Oklahoma. Hi there.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that the way Oprah handled her sister, she didn't know, her sister's thing that she didn't know about.
Her long-lost sister,
My moment. I mean, the way she handled it, she closed down all the media frenzy. I mean, that was perfect, the way she did that. That's my memorable moment. I never really benefited anything personally about her, from her. But that I was watching, and that time, that came up, I thought that was the best, the way she handled it.
And why did you like the way she handled it?
Because the media was going to make a big deal out of it. You see what I mean?
And she just said, here it is.
Yeah. The best way she did it, because she did it herself. So she closed all down. She goes down all the media frenzy, and the media was going to make a big deal out of it, you know, and the people write books and all that. So the way she did it herself, she interviewed her mom, and she did it herself. She brought out on the show. That was the best way she could handle it, because the media now didn't have any loophole to go about it.
Right. All right. Well, Theodore, thanks for calling. David, Oprah definitely did not shy away from putting herself into her show, and some people might recall back in the late 80s when she lost weight on the public stage and then came into the studio audience. Let's go back here and listen.
I have lost, as of this morning, 67 pounds. This is what 67 pounds of fat looks like. I can't lift it. Is this gross or what?
That was a red wagon full of fatty meat in a big plastic bag.
Yuck. You know, Oprah very publicly struggled with weight. And one of the things that I think is fascinating about her is she doesn't allow the rest of the media or other people to define her. She defines herself for herself. She knew that she always was going to struggle a little bit with weight. I mean, she was not a perfect television model. And at the same time, she just owned it. And so she presented that knowing, of course, that millions of Americans would identify with her in doing that. I must confess, the first time I ever ran a marathon, I've only done it twice, several friends of mine called and said, hey, you were on local TV news here in New York, you know, signing up and turning in your registration card. I said, that's great. Why would they put me on TV? They said, oh, Oprah was right behind you.
Oh, and you didn't know it?
I had no idea.
Mr. Media Reporter.
I missed the story.
All right. Chaz is in Goodyear, Arizona. Hi there.
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I don't want to get too controversial, but there was this moment. I don't remember the year. She had a show where she allowed people to, in the audience and people that had written in, to kind of give their opinions and tell what they thought about her, good and bad. And a woman stood up, it was a white woman. She stood up and she said, you know, Oprah, after you lost your weight, you know, you kind of lost me for a while. And I think I speak for a lot of people. And a lot of people in the audience were agreeing. And, you know, as a black American and having certain thoughts and views about things, it dawned on me. There was a point where I think more white Americans and others, if you will, than black people were watching Oprah. And when she lost the weight, it's almost as if there was this abandoning of her for a moment, as if fat Oprah was more acceptable than a slim and more attractive or sexy, if you will, Oprah. That's all. I just wanted to point that out.
Well, thank you for calling, David. It is remarkable how she did cross genres and attract a wide range of audiences.
Yeah, she very much was somebody who's popular among many African Americans, certainly closely monitored in the black-oriented press, but also who clearly appealed to people of all races because she connected in universal ways, because she anticipated certain interests, because she decided to say, you know, I want to focus on how people can better themselves. You mentioned a number of the people that she helped us, you know, create the careers of on television, like Mehmet Oz and Rachel Ray, Dr. Phil, Susie Orman. But in a sense, if you look at those, it's a lineup of, you know, how people feed themselves, take care of themselves financially, emotionally, their health. You know, she's saying, I'm going to focus on a host of issues that surround the way people live their lives on a daily level. And that really does appeal to people in a certain way.
But she did have to walk that line between different audiences, as the caller suggested.
Well, think back just several years ago to President Obama when he was a candidate for the presidency. And there was an element of the press that was attacking him as a radical black, the notion that somehow he was angry and associated with Reverend Wright's somewhat incendiary rhetoric at the Chicago church. there was also this notion among some in the black community, I remember this at the time, with questioning whether this son of a white Kansan woman, as well as of an African scholar in the States at the time, whether he somehow was not uniquely African-American, whether he was not black enough. And when she vouched for him, it made a huge difference, I think. It helped to propel further. She obviously later endorsed and campaigned for him. But, you know, her endorsement of him counted, and I think that spoke a little bit in some way to the credibility that she had among African-Americans throughout, but particularly by the end of her time as a TV host on that syndicated show.
All right. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another call. Monica in Alexandria, North Carolina. Hi there.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
I think that Oprah has done many things, but most of all, taught women that you can speak up for yourself and empower yourself, but also how many people who have as much money as her believe in empowering others and know the difference between that pity is between pathological and putrid in the dictionary, and empathy is the only thing that empowers. I think that's her lasting legacy, what she did in South Africa, what she did for so many people. I mean, if every capitalist was as accountable as Oprah, this world will be a better place.
Mm, and she started a school there in South Africa,
right,
and became quite a philanthropist as well. That's a nice thought. Thank you for sharing it.
Thank you.
David?
Well, she's somebody who clearly cares deeply. I mean, this works on a number of levels. She talked about her own beyond modest, like incredibly impoverished upbringing. And she talked about what she said were sexual abuse that she suffered at the hands of trusted, relations, actually, and family friends. And in a way, although it's a painful subject and it's her own allegation, it made it possible for other people perhaps to talk about as well. There was a sense in which she was criticized at times for sort of engaging in therapy speak to the exclusion of other kinds of reflection. But she certainly, many women in particular, but many people felt that she empowered folks to speak about their true emotions. And I think that's another component of what she's doing beyond the philanthropy, which is in many ways commendable.
And just to get a sense of how incredibly broad-ranging and eclectic her career has been, we get this email from Sue in Nome, Alaska. I confess I've never watched her show, but I will forever remember her powerful, moving role in The Color Purple. That's the movie. The rest pales. So, oh yes, and on the side, she was a movie star. Let's get another phone call here. Ashley in Portland, Oregon.
Hello.
Hi, Ashley. Go right ahead.
Oh, sure. I was just calling. In 1996, I saw a show where the bone marrow recipient was reunited with her donor, and it moved me to go and get typed there was an upcoming national drive that she may have sponsored, but I got typed, and then in 2001 was actually able to be a bone marrow donor, and I never met the recipient, but I did hear through the Red Cross that she survived and was doing well.
Mm. All right, great. Thanks for sharing that. Let's take another one here. Christy in Rockingham, North Carolina. Hi.
Hi, yes. Great to be on the show. Thank you. I was calling just to mention the one show that stands out to me. I feel when Oprah Winfrey took a turn, you said she sort of did the salacious to start. And she, I remember, had on someone maybe 1980s or 90s that was blaming his mother because before birth, something had happened. He felt he was injured in the womb. And I remember thinking that the nation had really gone off the deep end. But she later apologized for that show. It might have been, you know, 7, 8, 9 years later. And I remember that is almost when she sort of rebirthed the show as taking responsibility, almost like, we're in charge of our own destination. And that's really when all of these new shows where she's, take charge of your own life, your own destination, your own path. And I just wanted to comment that I distinctly remember being disturbed that there was a huge talk show and she had on this person who I thought, you know, if we're going to be blaming people before we're born, where are we headed? We have no place to say we can make health for ourselves, but
all right.
Did apologize. So,
Christy, thanks for the call. I think we can slip in one more quick one here. Ken in Southern Pine, North Carolina. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing? My favorite moment from Oprah actually isn't even from the Oprah Winfrey Show. It's from Ocean's 13, I believe it is, where George Clooney gets caught watching Oprah. and Brad Pitt catches him, and they come to realize, you know, what good she was doing, because I think the family's getting a new house or something from Oprah. And at the very end, they make, I forget who the mark was, wasn't Al Pacino, but they make him give all his proceeds from the heist to Oprah. For her cause. I thought it was fantastic.
A culture reflected in culture. Thank you so much, Ken. Yes. Well, David, now that the Oprah Show will be no more, she's moving on to have her own network, OWN. What's it going to be called?
That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, what do you think will happen? Are her fans going to follow her there? What's her influence going to be now?
It's a lot tougher to do it on cable. There's just much smaller audiences. You have much less promotion. You just get lost at times in the shuffle and the digital tiers, depending on where you're sorted. You know, Discovery is a smart company. It's a joint effort with them. But, you know, the millions of people who tuned in and watched, I think it's important to remind folks of the book clubs that she spawned across the country and how she got people reading modern and older literature. Mm-hmm. You know, it was so influential in that way. It just strikes me as it's going to be a lot harder push to accomplish that on what's essentially a rebranded channel, the OWN, Oprah Winfrey Network. Her name will help. She's not going to be a daily presence in the same way, but she's clearly going to play a bigger role. Their CEO was just pushed out because of the flagging ratings in their first few months of existence. Rosie O'Donnell, the former and I guess future Queen of Nice, is going to pop back up there. But it's a real challenge.
All right. Well, thanks, David. We'll have to watch and see. To NPR's David Folkenflik from New York, thank you.
You bet.
Tomorrow, it's Talk of the Nation Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here to look at newly discovered planets floating all alone in space without a star. Monday, Neil Conan's back with a conversation with Bill Moyers. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington.